All right, everyone, I know what you're thinking. Where have you been? They're not thinking that, are they? No one's thinking that.
No one cares.
But we have not been here, obviously, for an extended period of time. I was away. I then got back. I was ill. There was then the race was cancelled. So we're like, let's just wait until after Monaco and we'll get back to it. But Racecast is officially back. So if you're new here for whatever reason, thanks. It's nice to see you. But make sure you like, comment, and subscribe. Do comment because we love it when you get involved. If you're going to do any of those three, make sure you do that one. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any other provider for whatever reason, do make sure you give us 5 stars. It really does help out the podcast. And that is exactly what made us number one in fantasy sports in Russia. So that is our biggest achievement to date. And we're going to really hang on to it. So yeah, we're going to crack on now. I'm not going to bore you anymore. It is post-Monaco analysis, looking into Barcelona for the coming weekend. We're going to crack on.
All right, guys, welcome along to a brand new podcast. And we are back. And do you know what? Fair play. A few people did message and go, when's the pod? Actually, someone this morning messaged saying, when's the pod coming back? So we are back.
Because Matt really slacked on his duty, basically. He took all the equipment home while I went away. And it was sort of, he was going to do stuff on the Instagram, at Racecast Insta. I would have tweeted, at Racecast Tweets. Done stuff for the TikToks, at Racecast TikToks, Clips. I don't know.
Racecast like that. Clips.
Yeah, that's it. But he just didn't.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, he took the time off. It wasn't agreed. He went AWOL, basically. I didn't sign off on this.
Yeah, no, to be fair, life became very busy. And then obviously you're away. And then I just kind of forgot.
It didn't become busy. Matt is basically salty because Lewis isn't winning anymore. So he doesn't like that Max is continuously winning. So he's just given up on F1, which many fans might feel the same way. But
I haven't given up on F1. I still think, you know, there's hope. But no, like, I did slack on my duty, so I apologise. That is my doing. But firstly, how was the holiday? Obviously, you went to Australia.
Do you know what I did? First night in Australia.
Let me guess. Can I guess?
Well, you know.
It's going to sound cool if I guessed it right, wouldn't it?
So I obviously got there a week. I got there like the week the Grand Prix ended. So they raced on the Sunday. I think I landed in Melbourne on like the Thursday, the Wednesday or something.
Not great timing.
It's not great timing. No, it was a little bit. It was the next week, yeah. And they still had everything up, like the grandstand. You could see like all the pits. Obviously, all the like signage was gone, like personal to the F1 teams.
Yeah.
But all the facilities are still there. So I went for a spin around Albert Park because you can just drive around there.
Is it cool?
Yeah, it was sick. I mean, granted, it was in a Kia, not an F1 car, not even like, I don't know, not even like a Mercedes. It was just a Kia. But it was cool to go around the track, and it's my first time driving in a foreign country.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. But they drive on the same side as us, so that made it nice and easy. And obviously, I knew where I was driving because I know the track.
Did you go at the same speeds in your Kia?
No. So what they do, right, is along the straights, they put up, because what people do is when the track is all set up, because it's slightly varied to how the road actually is. Like, for example, the chicane, that isn't actually like that in real life. They alter the track a little bit.
Yeah.
But on like the straight, they put all these like big like roadblocks up either side, so you have to like continually weave, so you can't go quick, basically. Yeah. You can't go quick in a Kia anyway, to be fair. But it was good fun. It was like, it was just a cool experience.
And then after Australia, you went to
Bali.
How was that?
I wouldn't have wanted to drive in Bali.
No.
If anyone's ever been to Bali, the roads are terrifying. You'll know that. You either have to get on the back of a moped, which is kind of terrifying, but they're like the way Elliot explained it to us is like, they're like professional moped drivers, which is true. And like, some mopeds have like 3 people on the back of, so you have the driver, then 3 people on the back of it. And then they'll just be like weaving in and out.
People on the back of a moped?
Yeah, it's fun.
How's that even possible? What, they wheelie? Do they just go up in
it's
yet?
Mental. And like they'll just be weaving in and out of all this traffic. Like we had to travel 17 kilometers from the last place we stayed to the airport. It took us 2.5 hours.
Christ.
So it's a mental place. Or you can go in a taxi and you feel kind of safe, but you still feel like you're going to mow someone down every 2 minutes. But then it takes ages to get everywhere.
Was it a good experience, though?
Yeah, it's good. I would go back to Bali. Like it was. I actually preferred Australia, though.
Yeah.
Like the country. I was never interested in Australia.
Did you just stay in Melbourne?
No, we went up to the Sunshine Coast.
Nice.
So like just north of Brisbane.
Yeah.
Noosa. Don't know if anyone knows that. So no, it's good. Oh yeah, they have like these things called RSLs.
What's that?
Don't know how to explain them. They're basically like, I'm pretty sure they're like the lifeguard clubs that they have on like all the major beaches.
Yeah.
Like, up there.
Like Baywatch.
Kind of, just in Australia.
Did you have like Sac Efron running down?
It's like a pub. It's like a Spoons on a beach in Australia. But like the clientele is not the same as Spoons. Like just like it's like normal people. So you can just go there, get cheap beers, you're right on the beach, and you just look out. It's quality. Yeah. I can understand why people live there, basically. It's a very nice lifestyle, I think they have.
Yeah, no, I've been twice, and I really liked it.
It's just fucking miles away and in the middle of nowhere. Like, here, right, we can just nip to Spain. You can even, really, you can just nip to America from here.
Mm.
Like, 6 hours to New York or whatever. There, if you 6 hours, you're still in Australia.
I think last time we discussed this on the podcast, I know we'll get onto F1 in a minute. Sorry, we're just catching up. It's been a long time since we've done a podcast. You were going, did you upgrade to business or first class when you went out with Roof?
No, but I did check. Okay, so little tip for those that like, you know, if you want to treat yourself and you're catching a flight, to upgrade, it was only £1,000 on the day.
Yeah.
If I booked the flight, it was like, I think £6,500. And I called up the day before to upgrade and they tried to charge £4,500.
Christ.
I didn't do it, mainly because I didn't want to pay for Ruth. and I was like, well, I can't ditch her, so.
Did you tell her?
Well, we had an issue with the luggage, which I won't go into, but fucking hell, like, basically there wasn't luggage on her ticket. And for us to get her luggage to Malaysia and then Malaysia to Australia and then Australia back home, it was going to cost $2,500.
No way.
Yeah, they were
just
for
luggage.
They were going to charge us per kilo per journey rather than just adding a bag. But basically, my advice, I won't go into that story because it's just boring, but you can imagine how like stressed I was at the time as well. If you're booking plane tickets, just do it through the airline. Do not book through Expedia, for one, but any travel agent, it's not worth it. Even if it's going to cost you like an extra £50, £100,
mm.
Unless it's a short haul flight, like, don't. But I mean, like, these flights were costing like £1,000. And I wish I had just spent like the extra like 50 quid
just
book it through like the airline, because they could have just, it was a simple fix if it was through them.
Yeah.
But because it was booked for an agent, can't do anything, mate. Oh, right. What, so like, if I want to get her bags to the other side of the world, I have to spend £2,500, do I?
Just for a bag? That's mental.
Because it was £24 a kilo to Malaysia, then yeah. £42 a kilo to Australia, and then £42 a kilo back.
How long were you in Malaysia for?
2 nights.
Oh, nice.
I was like, I'm not paying it. I had to take hand luggage instead.
Did you just... Was that the suitcase, that one that was out there?
That got left behind, yeah.
Oh, was it?
Jamie had to come pick it up and bring two hand luggage cases.
No.
Yeah, so I went to Australia. Well, I didn't. I had my luggage. I had luggage on my ticket. I read the terms and conditions. Ruth didn't. But yeah, basically, yeah, it's just book through the airline. That's my top tip for this week.
Nice, nice. Well, it's good to have you back, and it's good to be back. So yeah, I hope you guys are all good. Hope everything's going well. So let's get into F1. So as we know, Imola was cancelled. Awful flooding. I mean, I remember getting sent images, and I was like, this has surely got to be a joke. But the more you delved into it, it was crazy.
Yeah, I think it's because if you looked at the actual track was
okay.
It was like... wet, but it wasn't like flooded. But then you look like literally just beyond the barriers of the track, flooded
into the paddocks. There was like already trucks in there, which were TV trucks and everything. It was just mad scenes.
And obviously all the local area, like people's actual homes. And no, it made no sense to race there because first and foremost, I mean, people literally having their livelihoods washed away and you're going to put on some fancy fucking event. You've then got how are people going to get to the event? Like there's not like a canoe shuttle service, is there? People wouldn't be able to get there anyway. They've got bigger things to worry about. Yeah. And then you're going to take the emergency services away from there as well. I was gutted primarily because the Mercedes upgrades were meant to come. So like as Mercedes fans, we've been waiting for those upgrades for so long. And it was like, finally, we're going to get to witness them. And it was like, oh, cancelled.
It was definitely the right call. And I tell you what, and we discussed on the podcast, you know, even before you went away, Tsunoda, I love this guy. And there was images, I don't know if you've seen, of him staying on that week to help, you know, clear, you know, help locals. What a guy.
He does live there, though, doesn't he? I'm under the impression he lives there.
I don't know if that's true. But I know he was there for a long period of time with us.
AlphaTauri HQ is.
You could be right. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure I am right. Not that that takes anything away from him. I'm just saying, it makes sense why it would be Tsunoda and not any other drivers. But yeah, I mean, the fact that he earns a lot of money. Let's be realistic. It would have been very easy for him to just go to his high castle and just put his feet up. But he got stuck in and helped the community. So
yeah. And, you know, that was a shame, but they're definitely the right call. And obviously, then we went into Monaco this weekend. Before we get into Monaco, there's a lot of talk still about Lewis to the Ferrari.
I can't
see it happening.
I don't think it's going to happen. And I genuinely think, why? Why would it happen, right? Ferrari have shown, even last year, with a good car, they'll fuck it up for you. Don't worry. Doesn't matter how good the car is. They'll ruin your race. And even just look at this weekend at Monaco.
Yeah.
They still ended up, what was it, P6 and P8?
P6 and P8, yeah. And at the time, before all the pits happened, Sainz was P4?
Yeah, they lost. Yeah, he was P4.
So he lost, because he had to double stack, he lost almost, four places. So Ferrari this weekend, you still get the feeling that they're not learning from mistakes. And actually, was Bonotto really the issue? We're still seeing them making similar mistakes. So I don't know. It'd be interesting. But I can't see Lewis going to to Ferrari. I just can't see it. I don't think it makes logical sense.
And genuinely, like, I think the rumours are just plucked out of thin air. Mm-hmm. I know there's no smoke without fire. And there may have been, like, a conversation had. But all the rumours of, Ferrari have made Lewis Hamilton a £40 million offer and stuff like that, I think it's probably bullshit.
Yeah.
I think from a career point, if it was this time last season, if you were Lewis and this thing was happening, it probably would make sense because we at this point in the season, we hadn't truly seen, like, Ferrari's incompetence at the level that it is actually at.
No. You started seeing drivers incompetent, such as Sainz in Melbourne. You saw him then in Imola.
But also saw, like, the potential of the car. And I think at Monaco, we were still pretty convinced it was the quickest car.
Yeah.
This time last year, we were still convinced the Ferrari was the car you want to be in.
Yeah.
But yeah, fast forward a year, I genuinely would rather be in that Mercedes team.
No, I agree with you. I agree. Obviously, let's talk about Monaco. So this time last year, we were talking after the race about, you know, Sergio Perez winning there. He had, you know, phenomenal. Bit different this year. Perez has had a shocking weekend. Let's just go straight to qualifying, because qualifying, and I have to say, I know, you know, we've said in the past, Monaco is one of the most boring tracks. It actually delivered this weekend.
Well,
I was actually impressed.
We do always say, you know, like, Saturday is the day for Monaco. Yeah. If you're going to make yourself available for one part of the F1 content that weekend, just make it qualifying, because it's going to be more enjoyable than the race.
Yeah.
And I still believe that to be true for this weekend. But the race I actually thought was quite good as well. But qualifying was exciting.
Qualifying was very good. Let's start off in Q1. So it was going all right. There was not really many issues. And then Sergio Perez. I mean, I defend you a lot on this podcast, and I think you have the potential to be a world champion. I genuinely do believe that.
I'm just going to put it out there that I don't.
No, I think he has it in him to be a champion. The issue is he keeps making stupid mistakes. Every time he gets ahead, every time he actually does a, you know, he comes up against Max and he's like, okay, you're seeing a bit of progression. He screws it for himself.
I think that's the consequence of going up against someone like Max Verstappen.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you see it in people, his new nickname, Barrichecco. Whoever thought of that? That is such a good nickname. And it, like, it is true, isn't it?
I
feel like he's obviously well established as the number two, and that's fine. But I feel like how do you think you gauge more respect as a number two? Is it just accepting your position, like Bottas and like Barrichello, where they never really tried to prove themselves?
No.
Against but Schumacher. But
they're consistent.
Yeah, and that's what
they,
I mean.
They deliver consistent results.
And then you just get that, like, P2, yeah, which you should be getting. Or do you get more respect by, actually, no, they're trying, but then shit like this happens where, okay, he's really pushing, in theory, so he can compete with Max.
Yeah.
But now he's crashed out.
Well, I mean, this weekend, going into this weekend, obviously they were close in the championship, you know, table. Him and Max, we thought actually it's pretty good. It's going to have a bit of a challenge. And he goes into Q1, puts it in the wall, red flag, and he's starting from the back. You got a bit of a Red Bull sandwich. But for me, to be actually establish yourself, you need consistency. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you're always like P1, P2, but you're always picking up good points week in, week out. And that's what Bottas used to do. That's what Barrichello used to do. They used to get enough good points to actually stabilize themselves in that team and go, do you know what? Yeah, okay, I may be a number two, but I'm bringing something with it. What we're finding with Perez at the moment, he brings, like, you know, one or two, three good races. He finishes P1, P2, and you're like, okay, this is quite, he's getting a bit of consistency.
Then,
and he does something stupid.
Then he drops a clanger.
Yeah. And that's it's hard to defend a driver who is like that week in, week out. It's hard to defend him because he's got a car. One, he's got a car that can compete. It's the best car on the grid. Granted, he's got a really tough competitor in Max Verstappen.
By a country mile, by the way. It's not like, it's not close.
No. And, you know, he's got the skills to do it. I don't know what the word is.
I genuinely just think it's the pressure of going up against someone like Verstappen. But, you know, it can't be easy. Checo's been in the sport for years. And, like, okay, I know Max is not new, but he's still very young.
Yeah.
So he's got this young, like, hotshot driver who's on top of the world. And he's probably just thinking, like, how? Like, how is this possible? How is he so quick?
Yeah.
So Checo's having to push beyond what he's genuinely capable of. And then these little mistakes happen.
Do you know what I find sad the most? Not necessarily from a Perez point of view, but from a fan point of view, we potentially had an opportunity for, especially the next few races, of having a good battle between teammates. With Perez going off this weekend, all I see in my eyes now is Max just walking away with it. I can't see it coming back and going, okay, we're going to have a battle.
Max just doesn't make mistakes.
No. And that's the frustrating thing is, we as fans, I feel like we've lost that, you know, team battle. You know, you go back to 2016, Rosberg, Hamilton, it was all throughout the year, good consistency. And I had a bit of glimmer of hope that we might have that this year with Perez and Max. But after this weekend, that's gone.
Yeah. Yeah, I would be very surprised if Checo were to come back at Max now.
I'd be very shocked.
Are you expecting Alonso to finish above him?
I think Perez will finish second, but yeah. I think there'll be more of a battle between Perez and Alonso than anyone else. I think those two, I think, would battle more. Because you've got to remember, yes, Perez is in the faster car, But you've got Alonso in that Aston Martin, who is far smarter than from Perez in the racing world.
And they are like, Aston Martin are developing the car as well. They brought upgrades this weekend. They'll be bringing more.
Yeah.
And that car is just going to get quicker and quicker. I know Red Bull are going to bring upgrades as well, but, you know, there's no saying that Red Bull are going to continue to extend the gap, or the gap will stay the same. They're going to develop at the same rate as other teams. They do have a wind tunnel penalty.
Yeah.
You know, we should start seeing the effects of that at some point, and we likely will see it in development.
Mm. Let's just touch on qualifying. I thought, as you said earlier, was brilliant. You had people like Tsunoda, who was P1 in Q2 at one point, and I was thinking to myself, what is going on?
Well, Ocon was P1 in Q3 at one point.
You had Hamilton in the drop zone for ages. They had to go in and put fresh softs on to be able to even get a quick lap in.
I thought he was gone.
Yeah, me
genuinely.
Too.
Genuinely.
You said you had Ocon there. You had the McLarens up there as well. You had, you know, they were doing, what, 1 minute 17s, and all of a sudden we're like, what's going on? And
what?
Was it 160? No, hang on. Am I making...
Oh, I think they qualified on 111s.
They qualified on 111s, yeah. Oh, so here we go. Sorry, I ignore everything I just said. It was 113s they were qualifying on. Sorry, yeah. I was thinking of race.
The rate at which the track was evolving was unbelievable.
And it was just every lap. You saw I think something different.
It also goes to show that the drivers, each time they go around, they like clock a little bit. They're like, right, I can probably get like a centimeter closer to the barrier there, so I can break like a millisecond later. And they're taking these added risks each lap. And I know the track's gripping up as well, but they're just shaving time off.
Yeah.
That is the impressive thing about Monaco, is you see it just change in front of your eyes.
Yeah. There's no like you have to wait a few laps to actually see it. You're literally just seeing things just change.
Yeah.
And what was nice this weekend, your grid was a mixture of all different teams. You had the McLarens up there, the AlphaTauris were there, you had, you know, Alpines there. It was always evolving. It was great.
The Alpines, just by the way, we should probably shout them out. They had a really good weekend, and they did also, I don't know if you saw like the upgrade list that like the FIA published.
Yeah.
They brought some pretty extensive upgrades as well. So clearly that has pushed them in the right direction.
Especially after the team principal,
the owner. Yeah.
Was pretty brutal about Alpine ahead of this race.
Yeah.
I haven't read the full thing, but as far as I'm concerned, he was pretty much saying they're not performing. They're underperforming. The drivers weren't performing. So a lot of pressure for the team heading into this weekend. But Otmar has basically come out and said, you know, this is a 7-year project. He knows what he wants to do. It's a 7-year project of where he wants to be.
7-year project. What is that exactly? Is he targeting retirement age, is he?
Well, yeah.
He's just trying to get the bags in.
When I get there, then I get good pension, then I'm out of here. Yeah. But no, he sees, you know, with the drivers, he sees where he wants the team to be and where they can be. And obviously it's very early, but the team this weekend definitely showed improvement.
And obviously we should say, like, with the upgrades, it's really hard to tell what is working and what isn't at Monaco, because like they bang on about all weekend, a lot of it is down to the driver.
Yeah.
There are obviously cars that perform better in lower speed corners. And like you see with, like, the Aston Martin was obviously really good here, and the Red Bull perhaps lost some of its advantage because we know that it's like pure pace is where its strength is at. But then you can look at like Verstappen's qualifying lap and taking 0.2 off him, like one of the last corners, goes to show you how important it is to be able to drive that track.
Yeah. I'm just trying to find out what the criticism was.
Which we probably should. I mean, that lap from Verstappen. So obviously, I think unless you're a Verstappen fan or a Red Bull fan, you were probably cheering on Fernando Alonso this weekend.
Yeah.
I know I was, because I knew the Mercs weren't going to be there based on like
practice.
I knew that Ferrari would probably do something that will fuck it up, so I wasn't going to root for them. And I knew that this track was suited to the Aston Martin.
Yeah.
And you've got someone like Fernando Alonso, who you know can drive the track. So when Max is in sector 2 in Q3, And he goes past the, I don't know, the little timing bit. He moves on to sector three and it comes up and he's 0.2 down. Because he was, he hadn't set personal best in either of the first two sectors.
I think he was 0.3 down at that point.
It was near enough that, yeah. wasn't it? And I was like, oh my God. Mm. I was like, Fernando's going to get it. He's going to win.
Yeah, that's what, exactly what I thought.
Come around, the smallest sector, by the way, sector three. Shortest sector on the track. No, Max has made up the time. Obviously.
But where do you make up over 0.3 on that?
So I read that due to the line he took through swimming pool, he was able to travel 3 kilometres an hour quicker than Fernando Alonso, which I think then allowed him to make the time up in the next corner.
It's mad, isn't it?
It was insane.
Because Max's was 1:11.365. Mm-hmm. Alonso was 1:11.449. So that's just...
He made up like 0.4 or something.
Yeah, no, mental.
It's insane. So, yeah.
Let's quickly cap off qualifying. So, obviously, the biggest shock in Q1 was Perez going out. You had Joel. You better have both Hasses go out and Sargent.
It was kind of a shock, but obviously he did crash. He did.
Yes.
It wasn't that he couldn't set the time.
But that's what I mean.
Yeah.
The person who you wouldn't expect to be in there was him. Heading into Q2, Bottas, Stroll again in that Aston Martin, not really performing there,
is he? Thoughts. I want to hear your thoughts. You listening and watching right now. Stroll. I know, right, you're now Lawrence Stroll. Your son, your beloved son, this product of, you know where it comes from. But are you getting rid of him? You've invested billions. You're investing billions. Well,
he's going nowhere.
That team, Lance Stroll, and I mean this in the nicest way possible, because I think Lance is a pretty good midfield driver.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I don't think he deserves to not be in F1, but he can't be at a team like Aston Martin at the level that they're performing,
yeah.
because Fernando Alonso has shown consistently what a good driver can do in that car.
Yeah, the car's got it. You know, the disappointing thing is, if you had another driver alongside Stroll, any other driver, you probably wouldn't notice it as much. But
yeah.
because you've got Fernando Alonso in that car, who's getting everything out of it, look at all his results he's had this year. It's simply because...
He's been on the podium nearly every race,
yeah,
bar one,
and
I
that's
think.
Simply because, of one, he's Fernando Alonso, but two, his tactical genius when he's driving that car. And he's playing smart games. He's looking at things ahead, his tyre preservation, all of that stuff. Something which Stroll doesn't have.
Hmm. And I know apparently Stroll had floor damage that was affecting him, but Stroll was off all weekend.
With bloody bumper cars, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about him in the race, but, you know, we'll try and break it down, because if he does watch this for whatever reason, it could get ugly.
Let's just say, so Q2, you had Bottas go out, Lance Stroll, Alex Albon, Nick de Vries. Nick de Vries was P12.
I do want to shout out Nick de Vries.
Yeah.
For once, he had an under-the-radar weekend, which I think Nick de Vries needed. He needed a weekend when nobody needed to talk about him.
Still no points, though.
Still no points, but he didn't do bad.
Yeah.
He didn't just decide to not brake and crash into the back of someone.
Yeah.
So, if I'm Nick de Vries, I'm happy with the weekend. I can't actually remember where he finished, but obviously it does get a little bit complicated when the rain comes and all these strategy calls are made.
Well, Nick de Vries started 12th and he finished 12th. So not bad.
I'm just saying, I would be happy with that if I was him.
Piastri was P11, going into the top 10. So you had Lando Norris in P10. Shout out to Tsunoda coming home in P9 in qualifying. George Russell 8th, Gasly 7th, Hamilton 6th, Sainz 5th, Ocon 4th, Leclerc 3rd, Alonso 2nd, and Verstappen 1st. However, Leclerc ended up, he got a 3-place grid penalty after blocking Norris.
Which he did block him.
He did.
If you haven't seen the footage, they're going through the tunnel and Charles just decides to sit on the racing line and just, he's like going so slow.
Yeah.
Did you see the clip once Charles had gone... I think he was heading to a swimming pool.
Yeah.
And he's just, he puts his hands together and he starts like praying. It just like he knows, he yeah. knew that that penalty was coming and it was deserved.
And what I don't, what I still, I don't, correct me if I'm wrong here and, you know, give me your opinion. It really frustrates me that we have to wait still to after the race to get these answers, because that's prevented someone from like Ocon having his, you know, post-qualifying interviews, you know, having that type of experience of, you know, finishing third in qualifying.
Getting like the whole experience.
Yeah. And it really frustrates me because I'm like, we're in a world now where you have so many video angles, you have cameras everywhere.
Well, you can
make these decisions quick, but we're still waiting. And what's shown this year with, you know, the FIA, the decision making is still very, very slow.
Yeah, they are slow as shit.
If you can have VAR in football, surely with the amount of money and the amount of camera angles and the video angles, all this stuff, you can make decisions quick.
Yeah, they should be able to make them a lot quicker.
You know, and don't get me wrong, it was nice for Leclerc. He got a, you know, round of applause when he went up and did his, you know, post qualifying interview. But Ocon missed out on that. Ocon missed out on that experience after. And don't get me wrong, it's having an interview and all this stuff. But
for someone that doesn't get that, like, that is...
Yeah.
It is part of the whole thing. Like, Ocon missed out on, like, all that opportunity where... Yeah. Which is something he's just not used to. I know he's won a race and whatnot, but, like, come on, Ocon's not used to getting podiums.
No. So I just think the FIA are still very slow in their decision-making and... It's frustrating. It is frustrating. Let us know what your thoughts are. Do you agree? Just do you not?
Touching on the FIA, did you see in F2?
That driver...
The marshal that like almost got sliced in half.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have seen this, but in the F2 race before the F1 race, their marshals were on track... Sector one, coming up the hill. There's double waved yellows, to be fair. Or is it just yellows?
Double waved, I believe.
And a driver's coming round, and the car is parked up on the left-hand side. There's marshals there. And oh my God, thank God for the reactions of drivers. I haven't looked into this incident anymore. I don't know if it's the fault of the driver. It can't purely be the fault of the driver because there are marshals on track.
Just be a red flag, doesn't it?
I think in a position like that, yeah, and round a track like Monaco...
You're going into a fast corner,
yeah,
heading down into the casino, isn't it?
100% needs to be red flag
on
a track like Monaco. We said they pull the red flag, they are trigger happy with that red flag until they need to be. Like, you know, if that happened on a track like Barcelona next week, well, I think like double waved yellows... is enough when you can actually physically see
it. Yeah.
But this, coming you around a blind corner, in Monaco, the smallest tightest
good reactions,
track.
Good reactions, but yeah.
Thank God for their reactions, because if that was me, oh my God, I would have wiped them out clean. It would have been gone.
Well, the car was facing in the barriers, so the back end was actually halfway...
And the marshal was just standing by the back wheel, wasn't he?
Yeah, like the left rear.
Missed him by it. It must have been like inches.
Yeah, it wasn't. It was very close. But no, I don't know about the FIA. Still questionable. Anyway, race. Let's talk about the race. Heading into it, good start. Before we do that, did you see the Red Bull? Wait, I sent you the link. Did you see it? And did you watch it?
Yeah, I didn't really understand it. What?
So Martin,
I know he said like, oh, I'm going to get in shit or something.
No, so Martin Brundle wanted to interview, I think, Christian Horner or someone. Yeah. And he was like, no. He said, oh, I'm going to get in fucking shit for this. And then Martin Brundle, you just see his face go, what, he's swearing?
He's like, we're live.
Why are you, you know. And then he went to interview Horner anyway. So that was weird. And then...
Do we have any explanation on that? Or?
No, I haven't heard anything. Made me laugh. And then Martin Brundle interviewed Courtois and said, obviously, you know, you supporting your Spanish friends here today. And
yeah, but maybe that's because he plays for Real Madrid.
No. He because at the end of the interview, he goes, I just remembered you're Belgium.
Oh, fair enough.
I tell you what, Martin Brundle, love it. He's doing some good ones recently.
Yeah. Did you see him talking to the old woman as well, the photographer?
Yeah, that was cool.
That was good.
That was cool. Well, she was like 83, still taking photographs, wasn't she?
She was an old girl. She wanted his card as well.
She did. He went a bit red, didn't he? He was a bit like...
Risen Brundle.
Let's talk about the race. So, good start for Max down into turn one, quite comfortably.
Yeah.
It was quite clean. Hang on, can I just say one thing, right, what I don't understand? So, all weekend, practice, qualifying... You had Sainz in the wall. You had Hamilton in the wall. You had... Who else did you have in the wall? Perez.
Well, that was in quali.
Yeah, but you had... Across practice and that, you had quite a few. Come to the race, barely no one in the wall.
Until it got wet. But until, yeah. Until,
but you had a few little collisions, but none to make people just retire.
No,
you had Albon in the wall in practice.
I thought it was going to be like... Until that rain came, it was a pretty boring race.
Yeah.
Like, the rain made it exciting. And I genuinely just thought it was going to be... I was like, everyone's just going to get to the end. Mm. And, like, we're just going to continue going round and this is it. Especially when, like, because they got it so wrong with the rain calls. Like, they were, some of them were, like,
5 minutes.
Oh, rain in, like, 15 laps. And then, like... It went to a shot of pit wall. I can't remember what team it was. And it popped up on their screen saying no rain expected.
Red Bull.
And then 5 minutes later, it started pissing it down.
It was Red Bull, yeah. Max started on mediums. Alonso started on hards. There was a mixture of that, of hards and mediums.
Because Lewis also started on mediums.
He did.
I feel like he was not brave enough going into that like first corner and going up the hill.
No. Although he had a good start and he was close behind Sainz.
That's what I mean. He did have a good start.
Yeah.
I feel like younger Lewis would have taken that opportunity. And I feel like...
What, up the straight? Up the long straight?
Yeah. I feel like older Lewis is a bit more... No, let's just bring the car home.
Yeah. I think Lewis has got more to... You've got to remember now, he lost to, you know... He got beaten by George last year. So regardless of whether people, he took a lot for the team by, you know, different developments and that, from him, he does not want to lose out again.
I'm also not saying I'm right. I mean, look, Lewis played it safe and he ended up fourth.
Mm.
I mean, that was clearly the right call in the long run.
Yeah.
But I just think at the time, I was thinking, I wish you were a little bit more aggressive.
Yeah.
I wish... Lewis would just get a little bit more nasty.
You've also got to remember, in practice, he'd already been in the wall, hadn't he?
Yeah.
So, you know, you're going into that, so you are going to be a bit more gingerly, aren't you, about where you place your car and stuff. Yeah. But good start from everyone. You had a bit of a beef at the back with Hülkenberg and Stroll.
What the fuck was Hulk and Smash doing? Because, mate, what the hell was that? He just didn't brake. He just... I pissed myself when I saw it. So he obviously... Just didn't break into that corner. He then obviously kind of got the position, came back round. Was that when Stroll decided to drive into the wall randomly, or was that a different point? But they then came round the corner, the hairpin, and Hülkenberg's just like ramming into the back of Albon in the Williams. And it's just like, how has he got away with that? And he did get a penalty. He got a 5 second penalty, to be fair.
But then he came into the pits and...
Served it incorrectly.
Well, no, it wasn't even that. He came into the pits, didn't he, after lap one for fresh tyres, but then he went to pull off without the rear tyres to one.
So it took like 11 seconds, didn't it?
Yeah. Sergio Perez also pitted after lap one, gained three spaces, places with
that. I just want to say, that shows you the strength of Red Bull's strategy team, by the way. They made that call... Like that.
Yeah.
And it gained him three places. That
Hulking
is why they're...
smash.
Oh my God, mate, I could not believe it. That was rogue from him. And then we had a... So, Hülkenberg got a 5 second penalty, right?
Yeah.
For very little contact.
Yeah.
Why did Sainz not get a penalty?
Yeah, I don't know.
He completely went for a move on Ocon after the tunnel that wasn't there.
No.
He then smashes into the back of him.
Was he all right this weekend? Because I was actually quite worried about him because he was very animated on the radio, like more animated than he's ever been before. He was proper going for it, wasn't he?
Did he get dumped or something?
I don't know, but I worried for him because he was proper going. Like, he was constant on the radio.
Taking it out on Lewis as well. For some reason, Lewis is fucking weak. I don't know where that came from. Like,
You don't say that type of stuff to a 7-time world champion because...
I mean...
You
lost the place to him anyway, I mean...
It's hard to dissect where we are in the race because there's so many different aspects of it, wasn't there? That cars were
So obviously we had the signs smash, like signs smashed Ocon.
Yeah,
right.
Damaged his wing.
It was then driving round with an end plate hanging off, pretty dangerously.
Personally, he should have pit. The FIA should have told him to pit then because.
Yeah, but obviously with their typical like slow reactions, by the time they probably thought, oh yeah, we should black and orange him.
He'd come flying off
anyway.
Did you see Leclerc and Lewis go over that?
Yep.
Luckily he didn't get a punch.
I called it as well. We were both like, Lewis is going to drive over that, obviously, and surprised it didn't give him a puncture. Yeah. But
well, even Leclerc, he almost screwed his own teammate over.
I can't understand why he didn't get a penalty for it.
No. I don't know, yeah. And what I don't understand by it is, and this is how amazing it is, okay, you can have no end plate on it and actually you have no difference to your driving round in Monaco. If that was any other grid, surely you'd notice a difference. But he kept it the whole race. Kept it the whole race, which was just mental. So you had signs. He was just moany all afternoon. Max was keeping a comfortable gap up the front, still on those mediums, and he did a great job on those mediums. The amount of deck on those mediums were awful.
He took them a long, long way.
Yeah. Considering, if you look at it, so what they say is about lap 30 to 35 is when the mediums, you'll be pitting for hards.
And you could see, like, on the medium runners, the tyres were graining, like, they did not look good at all.
Lewis pitted for hards, I think it was on lap 30. And this was another thing with Sainz, right? Sainz was on hards and they pitted him on lap 33, 34, I think it was, for mediums. Considering there was still...
They had to cover Lewis.
Yeah, but...
They had to pit Sainz.
But you're coming out... What I don't understand, though, is you're coming out on those mediums on lap 33, 34, still, you know, with another 45 laps to go.
They had to. Yeah. I get what you're saying. But if they didn't, he would have lost the position to Lewis.
Yeah, but he didn't care about Lewis.
Well, no. And this is why when he came over the radio and said that, I was thinking, like, what are you on about, you fucking dumbass? Like, you should be. Like, he was... Because if Lewis got in front of him, he wasn't overtaking him. That's no props to Lewis.
It was also Ocon, because Ocon was on the mediums and he lapped on 32, lap 32.
Yeah, but Ocon... It got to a point where Ocon needed to think about Lewis as well.
Yeah.
So... I did like that strategy, the medium to hard.
Yeah.
Because I think it did force the hard runners in front of you to have to pit.
Yeah. No, I think if I had to pick out of the one, I'd start on medium.
You get the better launch off the line.
Yeah.
Like, all it takes is, say Sainz got a poor launch because his tyres weren't up to temp.
Yeah.
Then Lewis would have easily skirted past him because naturally he's got more grip on those tyres. It was a good move.
Let's just quickly touch on Logan Sargeant because we had a discussion before, didn't we? Williams this weekend. So Sargeant pitted on lap 20, then he pitted on 23. By that point, he'd already used all his hard allocations and his mediums. So when he came after lap 23, he then came in again on lap 52. And he went on to softs. Is that right? No. Ignore everything I've said.
52 would have been wet.
He lapped. On 23, he pitted and he went on to softs. I remember thinking to myself, why on earth would you go on to softs on lap 23? Yeah. Obviously, he had used all his allocation for hards and basically mediums. And it was interesting. James Fowles, you know, came over the radio and he was talking about it. And they knew the race was over pretty much. So what they decided to do is allow him and give him time on these softs for tyre management. Like, I don't think I've never, I've never heard a team actively come out in a race and go, well, we know at this moment in time, this is where we are, but we're going out on softs to help with tyre management, teaching Sargeant, giving him a bit of pointers, seeing how we can improve. I liked it.
Yeah. No, I think it's good. And I think if you're in that position, that's probably how you actually develop as a team. Yeah. That's how you develop your drivers. They know that the points aren't available. What's the point in just going round and round? Like, yeah. That's not going to benefit him as a driver. It's just going to get him more laps around Monaco. If they're using that time to educate him, I think it's good. One thing I will say is from the flip side of that, is should you have an F1 driver that needs lessons about tyre management? And that might be like the sinister inside of me.
I disagree with that, because I think what James Vowles has done, and we also said this, I think he's done a great job since he's gone to Williams. I love when they speak to him on a Saturday or a Sunday on the pit wall. I love his insight. I like how honest he is with his approach to how he's managing the team, what he's trying to do. He really gives an insight in what teams are actively trying to do to develop. And I really like that. And I think any driver, especially coming from F2 into F1, tyre management is completely different. And I think it's a great lesson, especially round tracks like Monaco, especially street circuits. Your tyre degradation goes differently in different circuits. So tyre management is so key. So I rate it. I think it's very good.
Yeah, I think you can look at that from the flip side. Like both sides, you could argue like, yeah, that is brilliant from the team. Like they are trying to educate the driver, a rookie. And then you have got the other side, which is like, well, why do I want a driver that I need to teach how to manage his tyres?
I don't think they're necessarily trying to, it's like a, oh, today class, we're going to learn this.
They just used the opportunity. Yeah. I understand that.
I think they knew that his tyre allocation was basically shot to pieces. Okay, what can we do to get the most out of this? You know, you've seen teams over the years literally would get to a point where they're not, or they're struggling, they're at the back, they retire the car.
Yeah, which that I've never understood. Well, if you're a leading team,
if you're trying to save stuff, yeah. But I kind of like the fact that they're okay. Yeah. Because obviously,
The fact that they've done something different.
You've also got to remember this data that they've got from this soft compound in this type of situation will be key later on in the year.
Yeah, it could. It might have helped them massively.
You think when they go to somewhere like Las Vegas, you know, this type
Singapore.
Of Singapore, this type of data could be fundamental to how they decide to do things and the deck, you know, what is, you know, how that affects it in certain. So I rate it. I think it's good. And I, you know, they're thinking outside the box, kind of like
it's a different approach. It is a different approach.
So Max, for majority, probably from about lap 30 onwards until we pitted for Inters, was struggling. We say struggling.
Well, he was complaining about the tyres.
He was complaining about the tyres.
I think understandably, he was on them for like an extended period of time.
But it shows you how good he is, because he managed those tyres up until lap 55. That's impressive. On a medium, considering those mediums were meant to go off between lap 30 and 35, he kept them going for another extra 20 odd laps.
At which point the rain had come.
The rain had come.
Now, this benefited George Russell.
Massively, yeah.
Who hadn't pitted yet. I think it could have benefited the McLarens. I think they pitted just, like, literally just before, did they not?
Lando pitted just on lap 51.
Yeah.
And then Piastri obviously overtook him, but then they had to come back in and, yeah, they ended up pitting again.
George Russell was the biggest winner there.
He was.
Fernando Alonso also had an opportunity, to which I believe he would have won the race had he have gone onto the intermediate tyres when he first came in. But instead he came out on slicks. And
I don't see it, though. So let's dissect that, okay? Because
we need timings.
If I remember correctly, at the point, Fernando was 8 seconds behind Max.
Yeah.
Before they pitted, okay. Alonso then pitted.
Yeah.
Went on to hards.
Yeah.
Then went back out. It started raining heavily quite in turns 6 and 8, and that's where the rain was, the majority of the rain
how,
was.
How many laps were in between Fernando and Max's pits. What you've got to remember is if Fernando came out on the intermediate tyres, he would have been a lot quicker than Max at that time when Max was on the mediums.
Yeah, so Fernando Alonso pitted on lap 54
yeah.
for hards. Max Verstappen then pitted on lap 55. So literally one lap later.
He would
later.
Have given him one lap. Would he have been...
I don't think he would have been 8 seconds slower. No, but no.
That section was incredibly slow. I need to see the data on this because I haven't actually looked at it for the sector times. On what you need to see is...
Hold my mic a second. Let me have a look.
We need Max Verstappen's sector times from lap 55, basically. Well, and lap 54, I guess. Because I am so convinced that Fernando would have come out in front because he would have been able to take that section so much quicker. And Max hit the wall on that lap. I don't think you're going to be able to find them. You probably will be able to get them from somewhere.
Right, let me have a look at this. There's actually a cool... I don't know if you've ever seen this. There's actually a... a website called formulanerds.com.
Oh, what's that about?
Probably some smart people talking about.
My go-to is Formula Data Analysis on Twitter. Should check him out. He's always got some quality content.
Even Alonso said he doesn't think he would have made that difference.
We need to see the data, but I do think it would have been close.
Yeah.
And there's a lot more overtaking opportunities when it is wet.
Yeah.
Because the braking distances.
Granted.
So I just think... I mean, I think even Alonso came over the radio and was like, huh? Like, yeah. Why?
I think he was a bit confused by it. But even when people are going on the inters, so you saw... Who did you see go down the... Not alley, but off track? You saw George go off?
Well, Stroll went off. And then didn't George follow him? Or did George go off, then Stroll went on as George was turning around?
Stroll went first, and then it was Russell.
This got a bit weird. Perez obviously smashed George.
No penalty.
When George came back on the track.
Yeah.
George got a penalty for how he rejoined the track. If you actually look where they collide, how has Perez not seen him?
He's literally right. It's right in front of him, because he's coming down that hill, isn't he? Into the corner, you can see him.
You can see him very clearly.
Yeah,
very clearly. I found that a bit strange. Maybe I'm not saying Perez maybe needed a penalty for that, but I did find it a bit harsh on George because just because someone's driven into him, that doesn't mean it was a dangerous rejoin.
And like they said, the issue is you can't, once you reverse, you can't turn your head to see what is coming because you've got
the halo of structure and everything.
You can't see anything.
Whereas,
so you're hoping.
Perez would have been driving down that hill and he would have been like, oh, George Russell's there. I'll just carry on.
Just go straight into him.
I don't know. I don't know if that's me like being
No, I agree with you.
Unintentionally biased here, but I genuinely was like, that seems a bit harsh. Like, he hasn't reversed into Perez. Mm. George is stationary when Perez hits him.
Yeah.
Well, if that happens on the road here, and you're stationary and someone drives into you, it's not going to be your fault, is it?
Exactly. But for me, I think it's a bit harsh on George. Sainz obviously went off as well. He was on his hard still when it started pouring down. He spun, didn't he? Down into that corner.
Karma. Karma.
Then got overtaken by Leclerc.
He also got overtaken by Gasly.
Lewis.
George.
And then what happened? considering he moaned the whole afternoon, he then had to double stack for inters behind Charles Leclerc. He had a torrid afternoon.
Yeah, it didn't go right for him, did it, really? But I kind of... He did have some attitude the whole weekend.
I think I noticed... I don't know why I noticed it more, because it just, right from the word go, he was just, he just felt like he was under pressure.
Yeah. Because he's normally so like chilled and nice and.
And I like Sainz, but it just felt like he was under a lot of pressure this weekend. Mm. But I suppose they are. They're driving for a Ferrari. You
shout know, out K-Mag. He tried to stay out for ages on those Haas. Yeah. Didn't work. Didn't work. But I respect the hustle.
Also, shout out to Tsunoda. Okay, I felt really sorry for him this weekend. He was P9 pretty much the whole race. And then he had issues with brakes.
When he was complaining about them and his engineer was basically saying, like, you need to brake later. And he was like, are you trying to make me crash?
I know he's saying, change something on your gear stick to help with that. He's like, you're literally trying to make me crash. Because he was just kind of like...
No, I thought he was saying about his braking points.
Yeah, no. And then he was saying, oh, try and change your something on your setup.
It did sound like he was trying to kill him.
Yeah.
Obviously, Tsunoda was feeling something was not right.
But he was solid. Up until that point, he was solid. And it was really... I touched on this at the beginning of the podcast. You're starting to see progression from Tsunoda.
Yeah.
And the issue is, what we're finding at the moment, he can't quite get it over the line to get those points. You know, how many P11 finishes did he have at the beginning of the season? You know, he's there. He's getting consistent.
Especially in that AlfaTauri, which is not that great this season. No. It has taken a step back from where it was.
Oh, and McLaren, please never do that livery again. Oh. One, it confused the hell out of me because I thought it was an AlfaTauri for the majority of the race. And two, it looked hideous.
Yeah, it made the car look like a piece of shit. And I know everyone wanted the golf livery.
Or like that mug there.
Matt, yeah, like that one there. Matt even said, obviously that was to do with the sponsor, Golf, who now sponsor Williams, who are actually doing a vote where you can pick their livery. I can't remember what race it's for, but it's a Golf livery. And one of them literally looks like the McLaren one.
Are you doing the same?
Yeah, that's cool. It's just got the added Duracell battery.
Yeah, but you don't want the same on a different car, do
it's
you?
It's not exactly the same.
I understand if it's the same on
but
McLaren.
But it looks cool.
Yeah, but McLaren, please never do that again.
Yeah, yeah, just give it a rest.
Shout out to McLaren. Lando P9, Piastri P10. Solid weekend for them. They looked better. They've obviously got upgrades coming, so we're expecting a bit more from them. But isn't this like last year? You know, they had a terrible start to the year. Then they slowly started to progress. They brought upgrades and you start to see, you know...
Yeah, McLaren just need to... They need to hit the ground running next year. I think that's all. I do think McLaren are a team that, like, always kind of have faith in, especially with their driver lineup, particularly Lando, obviously. You're always like, oh, they can do something. It doesn't really matter about the car. They can get something out of this.
Yeah, no, I agree. Right, let's just finish off from talking about... And then just finish off the driver standings for Monaco. So... Max is obviously now in the lead still with 144 points. Perez with 105 points. Alonso P3 with 93. Lewis Hamilton in P4 with 69 points. Russell is in fifth with 50 points. And then you've got the both Ferraris, which you wouldn't have expected at the beginning of the season, down in P6 and 7.
I cannot believe.
Who's got more points, Sainz or Leclerc? I know, I tell you. So one of them's got 48 and one's got 42.
I think it's Sainz because Charles has had the DNF.
Very well done. Very well done. And this is a mad thing, isn't it? So you've got Fernando Alonso in P3, and this is what we touched on earlier. Fernando Alonso is in P3 with 93 points, okay? Lance Stroll is in P8 with 27 points. The difference between them two drivers is massive.
Night and day.
And if you're Lawrence Stroll, how long can you go, you know, back in your sun here when there is such a difference where if you had another driver who was picking up a good amount of points like Alonso is, that team could be in a very different place.
Because at this point in time, you know, they're at risk from the Mercedes.
Yeah.
Mercedes are bringing the upgrades. They've got two very competitive drivers.
Because if you look at the constructors, you've got Red Bull in P1 with 249 points. Then it's Aston Martin with 120 points. And then Mercedes are there with 119. And this is what we go back to saying earlier. You've got drivers who are consistently picking up points. And that's what you're seeing with Russell, Lewis. They're consistently picking up those points.
Even the Ferraris are consistently picking up the points. Yeah. And, you know, it won't take long for them to creep up on Aston Martin as well.
Yeah. Right, shall we quickly touch on, obviously, we've got Monaco. Let us know what your thoughts were about Monaco. Did you like it? Did you not? I actually thought, I'd give it an 8 out of 10.
Ooh, 8's a bit high.
Well,
I'll give it a 6.5.
It was the first Monaco Grand Prix. It actually got me sitting up going, okay, when it started raining, I thought it was a bit of excitement.
For Monaco, 6.5 is a high score, in my opinion.
I think you're being a bit harsh there.
I don't.
You had a good qualifying, solid qualifying. You had cars flying in the air.
If Monaco gets an 8, that's like a 10 out of 10.
All right. Let me sell this for you, okay? And I'll give you an option at the end to change your score. So you're saying 6.5. Okay, so this weekend, you had cars flying in the air. You saw the floor of that Mercedes, that Red Bull, okay? You saw some crashes here and there, an epic qualifying with random teams all over the place. You then had a race, which was quite enjoyable. And then you had the rain that actually completely flipped everything. You had cars spinning all over the place. You had great pit stops. You had double stackings. You had Lewis going P4. Are you going to change your score?
Other than Lando Norris overtaking Yuki Tsunoda, name me one other overtake that you saw.
K-Mag down into that corner on Albon.
Okay. Any more?
You asked for one more. I gave you one more. You can't keep asking.
I just want another.
Okay. Right. So let's talk about Spain.
Do you see my point? 6.5. That's fair.
But for...
I feel like this weekend is going to be a good weekend. This is a lovely little racetrack.
It is.
And they have also got rid of that shite chicane.
Yes. First time in it this weekend.
It's going to be better.
So let's quickly touch off by giving you the timing, shall we? So on Friday, the 2nd of June, you got FP1, 12:30 to 1:30. FP2 is 4 till 5. FP3 is on Saturday, the 3rd of June at 11:30 till 12:30. Qualifying is 3 till 4.
I just want to put it out there. I fucking hate these like half past ones. Just do it on the hour, man.
Yeah. And then the race is 2:07. 2 o'clock. I'm excited for this. I'm excited. Like you say, they've taken out that little chicane.
Give me a quiz now.
You already know it, don't you? Okay, when was it?
I don't know it. I don't know it because we haven't been playing F1 recently.
Okay. I'll buy you Freddo's for life, okay, if you get this. When was the first Grand Prix held in Barcelona?
Shit. Proper racetrack. I'm going to say the 50s. I'm going to say 57.
1991.
I was close.
Yeah, 40 years. Number of laps. I was about to say play at home, but before you give the answer beforehand.
Why? No, I'm always slow.
Yeah, well, you are. Take a while.
Play at home. I'm going to be thinking for a long time.
Comment quickly. You've got a bit of time.
I'm going to say 62.
66.
Oh.
And, lap record is not applicable, actually, because it's a different track, isn't it? So they've obviously gone by lap record from previously, so it's going to be a fresh new one this one.
But so they added it?
Huh?
Like, I swear it never used to have the chicane.
No. So they've put it. Obviously, it's a new track, so there's actually no lap record held. That's what they're saying here.
Yeah, but I feel like it used to not have that chicane.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm only going by this. DRS zones, you've obviously just seen it.
I actually haven't, but... I feel like it's 3.
2.
Oh, is it? So it's obviously pit straight and then the back straight as you come up and take the right hander.
So it is coming from here, DRS, and then obviously down this bit.
Yeah, I mean...
It's a long straight, isn't it?
Yeah, this has got Red Bull written all over it.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why, because do you remember when we raced it on the game?
Yeah.
You were running for whatever reason... a reduced drag setup. So you were playing like the top speed setup.
Yep.
You'd put that on your car. Now,
I have no idea I did it, but yeah.
I am, this is not bragging, but I'm better than you at the game. I'm quicker than you.
That's not bragging, it's facts. Yeah,
that is a fact.
Yep.
That's my point.
Yeah.
I couldn't overtake you.
Yeah.
Because the opportunities I had to overtake were down the straights.
And then my straight was speed.
And
was
your straight line speed was so insane, I couldn't do it. I did overtake you and you just overtook me back.
And then you crashed.
No,
then you cried.
You brake checked me.
You went into the back of me.
You
went out. You cried. You rage quit, actually.
Because
the issue is with Luke. Whenever you play this game,
let me speak.
Right, Dan, mute him right now. Okay,
Matt doesn't know how to drive, So like we were coming into the second DRS zone, and as we come out of the corner into the straight, we're coming out of the corner. Matt hits his brakes. So obviously I go straight into the back of him and I'm like, what the fuck are you doing?
Racing.
Racist.
Racing.
So yeah, I did turn my computer off. Fuck that.
He rage quits over it.
Smashed me into a wall and I DNF'd.
What, top three for this weekend's Spanish Grand Prix?
Lewis Hamilton, P1.
Right, take off your tinted sunglasses.
No, but what I will say is, do you remember how strong Lewis was there last year with that Mercedes? Obviously, he went all the way to the back, started P20.
We got hit by K-Mag, wasn't
it? Yeah, yeah, he went, like, but that's I mean. Like, in that, he then would have finished P4, but had to lift and coast for, I think it was fuel, probably. And then finished P5.
Yep.
In that Mercedes. We've now seen an upgraded Mercedes, which they're pretty convinced have made gains.
Yeah.
I do feel like the Mercedes is going to be more competitive here. It's not going to compete with the Red Bull. Max Verstappen is going to win the race. What I'm going to say is I'm going to say Max, Perez, Lewis.
Okay.
And Lewis or Alonso.
Yeah. My top three is going to be Max, Perez, Alonso.
Yeah. What about Leclerc?
I just can't see it at the moment. Yeah. I think Lewis P4. I just think that Aston Martin is just a bit too strong at the moment.
Yeah, and that it's the Ferrari race pace, which is just.
And you can't
off.
You saw it so many times last year. You can't rely on the team to make the right calls. So, for me, Max, Perez, Alonso. Yeah. With Lewis in P4.
I think that's a very safe bet. And I'm sure George is going to be up there too. But he did seem to be struggling a little bit.
Seems to be a bit more fit.
With the car this week.
Lewis seems to be a more consistent this year with picking up the points, and positions.
And like with the new upgrades.
Yeah.
Because the cockpit position has changed. They've come back 15 centimetres, which is as far as they could do it without changing the chassis, which they can't afford to do under the cost cap. So I do feel like Lewis has settled into that better, and it did seem like he was more comfortable driving the car this weekend than George. I'm sure George will pick it up, but yeah, just based off what we've seen this weekend.
Yeah.
And last year.
True. Do you have your phone on you?
Yeah.
Got fan questions.
Do we?
Yeah.
Did you post?
Yeah. Did I? See, I did my job. So each week, we ask you guys to send in your questions. I say each week, we haven't done it for...
I can't go on Instagram.
Why?
Because I've got like a screen block on. So like I can't go on it until 5 o'clock.
What do you mean you can't go on it till 5 o'clock?
Unlock 5 seconds. What? Who no, so like I've got a screen thing on, so a screen time thing. So I can't go on it between 7 a.m. and 5 p.m.
What reasons?
Well, because you spend too much time on it. You know what I mean?
That sounds actually quite a good idea, but it's not really most helpful now. Can you not get on it at all?
Yeah, I've got on it.
Oh.
So, it's a bit harsh. Why is De Vries so bad? After I praised him this weekend.
You did praise him. I don't think he's bad. I just don't think he's living up to the expectation, especially after Monza last year where everyone thought, oh, we got a real drive on our hands. Yeah. Don't get me wrong, he's driving an AlphaTauri. But he did that result last year, in a Williams. I said to you, I don't think he's as good as what people think. And if he doesn't start picking up some points, I do think he'll be gone soon.
Yeah, agreed. I think he'll get to the end of the season based on the fact that AlphaTauri probably can't pick up many points anyway this season.
No.
But
they're relying heavily on Tsunoda, and it's a lot of pressure on Tsunoda, really.
Hypothetically, what would be realistic replacements for Perez and Sainz? Or I guess who would be?
So
I was just reading.
For Perez, someone like Norris.
Yeah.
I still stand by that. I think Norris would be actually quite a good fit for Red Bull. I think he deserves the opportunity in a top team as well. For Ferrari,
I think he also makes sense as a Lewis replacement as well.
Yeah,
it kind of makes sense for all three. Like, kind of makes sense for a Sainz replacement as well.
He could even be for a Ferrari. Yeah, no, I agree.
A Stroll replacement.
Yeah,
but like, I think the point is there is Lando could fill any of those top teams.
Yeah, because
he's the best of the rest, and I mean that in the sense of car wise. I think ability wise, he's up there with all of them.
Yeah. No, I think that's tough. If you were going to pick anyone else for Ferrari, that's quite tricky. Obviously, there's speculation about Lewis. I can't really see it. I could have said someone like Gasly.
Yeah. Ocon?
Yeah, I don't think...
What about someone like Albon? I know he's had his shot at a big team, but he is performing in this Williams.
He is. Yeah, he is performing.
Is there going to come a point where he actually deserves another shot?
I think he just needs to do it consistently, though. I think
it must be quite hard being consistent in a car that is only good in high speeds.
Yeah, no. It's a tough one. Lando for Red Bull, someone like Gasly for Ferrari, I could see. Gasly could be like a Ferrari-type driver. I don't know. Yeah, Albon, you could say, but I don't know. Who do you think?
Lando, definitely. Like I say, Lando could go to either of those teams.
Mm.
It is hard with the rest because I'm not sure there's any other drivers that I look at and I think, yeah, okay, you're the same level as these guys. And I do think, realistically, Albon is probably the closest, in my opinion. I think he pulls a lot out of that car.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's experienced. Like, I know he's young, but he is an experienced F1 driver.
Yeah.
So I think Tsunoda's on his way. Perhaps give him a few more years and we could actually see...
Do you know what I worry about Tsunoda? Is I think he could potentially be gone by the end of this year.
Oof, I don't think so.
Well, no. I look how much pressure... So... He's going into his third season now. And I don't, what I'm saying, when I say this, I don't want this. I just feel if he doesn't start picking up the points, I think he could be in trouble.
I'll be surprised because I don't think they'll do a double replacement. And Nick DeVries will definitely be the first man to go.
We've got Danny Ric. There's talk that Danny Ric potentially.
Yeah, but did you see Helmut Marko saying that he's well off Verstappen and Perez in the sim?
Is he?
Yeah.
I didn't hear that, no.
Yeah, so. I'm not sure if Danny Ric will be coming back. I think he's a face we'd all like to see. But is that like nostalgia?
Is he well off in like massively off or is he just like...
I don't know. But he said he's off.
Yeah.
He's off then. Yeah, he's not up to their pace.
Unless he's sandbagging because he doesn't want to tell Perez and...
Maybe he just likes that number three position.
Yeah,
it's easy.
Maybe. Well, yeah. Can you imagine just go around like piece by piece? Have a laugh.
Just watch the F1 get paid for it. All right, we'll make this the last one. Thoughts on Russell's idea with swapping places with Hamilton? We didn't actually touch on this. George Russell has actually received quite a bit of stick over the last, probably this season, really, about his...
radio etiquette.
His lack of hesitation to come straight over the radio when he wants something to happen, maybe. Team orders. Always seems very keen to... invert positions with Lewis. I respect the hustle, the George Russell hustle, but it is a little bit annoying. I understood the idea, right, with Lewis today, yesterday, Sunday, for those listening, where he had the 5-second penalty, and if Leclerc was quick and George was quicker than Russell... George was quicker than Lewis, sorry. It might have made sense for him to invert.
Yeah.
And he said, I'll keep Lewis within 5 seconds. So that way, you know, Lewis holds the spot. However, right, Lewis would then lose the position, lose the opportunity to overtake Ocon. Now, at no point am I saying I thought Lewis was going to overtake him. All it takes is one mistake at Monaco.
Yeah.
Ocon could have locked up. he could have hit the wall. He could have had a puncture.
And you've got to remember, this was in conditions of rain at the time.
Yeah. And now, so we have all that. It doesn't make sense anyway. You know, you'd be like, no. Like, not at Monaco. I think at another track it might have made sense.
Yeah.
But then, gets to the point, Lewis is obviously stuck behind Ocon. George has pulled well clear of
Charles.
Fair play. He's on Lewis's arse as well, do you know what I mean? He's like basically talking about swapping places then. Mate, if Lewis isn't getting past Ocon, you're not going to get past Ocon. That's no disrespect. No one's getting past anyone. So I don't know what that was. Ocon was only 1.3 ahead of Lewis, so like he was being held up. It wasn't like Lewis was falling back.
No, no. And he kept that gap, didn't he? He even got up to two laps beforehand. He was down to like half a second.
Yeah.
So I just think I respected it at the beginning because I was like, okay, he's thinking this logically. How can we gain the most points? And all of a sudden, as soon as you started seeing the gap between George and Leclerc, you're kind of like, okay, well, there's no point. But he kept going and going at it. Oh, I'm faster than Lewis. I'm faster than Lewis. Let me go past. It wasn't going to make a difference.
And it just doesn't happen in Monaco. Right. It's just not how it works. No. Lewis isn't going to, like, because there is always that opportunity for a driver to make a mistake ahead of you. And then, you know, then Lewis gets a podium.
Yeah, no.
Because realistically, if George went through, Lewis let him through, and then he got Ocon, he's not giving him that podium.
No.
So, yeah, it is rustling a few feathers on Instagram, Lewis Hamilton Twitter. I can understand why. It's a bit annoying.
Let us know what your thoughts were. But that is it. We are back. That is the end of the episode. Hopefully you enjoyed that. If you did, leave a like rating. Subscribe if you're new, if you're watching on YouTube. If you're listening to us on Spotify, then leave us a rating on there. We really appreciate it.
And Apple Podcasts.
And any other listening service platform thing you listen to us on.
Don't bother. We don't care about them.
Well, we do. We care. Well, I care. But yeah, guys, hopefully you've enjoyed us being back. Luke, good to have you back.
Yeah, nice to be back.
When's your next 4-week holiday?
Not going away again this year. No. Don't want to.
Oh, you're staying here.
Yeah. I like it at home. People don't understand. They're like, oh, I bet you're gutted to be back. No. I like my house. I like my home. I like my dingy little hometown. I like going to the pub. I like going to Brighton.
Can't beat Seaford Massive.
I like Dee Dee's, our local kebab shop. I don't need anywhere else. 4 weeks is enough for a year.
Yeah, no. I'm very much with you. I quite like home comforts.
Yeah. I like knowing what I'm doing every day. I like waking up and being like, okay, I'm going to do this, then I'm going to go to the gym at 5, then I'm going to come home and eat. I know what I'm going to eat. I'm not going to order a pizza or a burger.
One of my friends has gone travelling for 8 months.
No, it's too long. I can
do it. Couldn't do it. But if you are one of those who go travelling for that long period, let us know.
Unless I was fully minted, and I mean like to the point where I've got, you know, like millions in the bank.
You're not far off, are you?
I am. you know, if I'm jetting here, there and everywhere, like first class, staying in like the best hotels, that's fine.
Yeah. Nice. But we don't have that.
No, that is a dream.
Luke promised me that when we started doing the podcast. He said, don't worry, Matt, in a year we'll be millionaires. Still hasn't happened.
It's coming.
But anyway, have a great week, and we'll see you next week for a brand new podcast. Bye-bye.